friends, Iceman and Firestar. Amazing friends.
Yes, it is Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU FM and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I'm your co-host, Walter Duralia, joined by my co-host, Chris Owen. Professor. Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
Yes. You in the back, student. Yes. Well, I'm sorry. What was your name again? Walter, right.
Yes.
Right. Yes, I am a professor of comic book history at Mohawk College. Welcome to the show, everybody. Hope you're enjoying this wonderful Wednesday.
It is a wonderful Wednesday, Chris. Chris and I are both fatigued.
Oh, I'm tired. I'm so tired.
Yes, we both spent a very, very tough weekend at the Fan Expo in Toronto, which we'll get to later in the show. But as always, we're going to start the show with highlighting some comics that are coming out this week, hitting the stands this week at your favorite local comic book store.
Yes, and as we all know, that Wednesday is the day for new comics, so go out and support your local comic book retailer. What have we got?
And your local comic book
retailer. I said local.
You said local.
Okay, you know, whatever. Local.
Same
thing. It's all good.
Tomato, okay. Tomato.
Okay.
Chris, today, guess what? Wolverine Road to Hell.
Yeah, you know what? I actually like this comic. I like this idea of this comic. So, Walt's looking at me like, I can't believe you actually know what it's about. But you know what? Whatever. That's why I'm the comic history professor. And you are the
not.
Comic. No, you're not. Exactly. You know what? The idea behind this comic is Wolverine, Road to Hell, number one. Wolverine is sent to hell, and he has to go ahead and basically fight all the different people that he's killed over the years.
Again.
So, you know, as if it wasn't bad enough the first time, he has to do it again now.
Wow. Like, and do they sweat more down there? How's that work?
Basically, a lot of sweat going on because it's pretty hot down there.
Yes. Okay, well, I mean, that premise is cool, I guess. And I guess maybe it's a recap on all the people that Wolverine has killed.
Pretty much. And you know what? Maybe there'll be times where he has any kind of regrets or something. And maybe it's like a philosophical kind of comic. You know,
You're right.
He has to reface enemies of the past, right?
Yeah, good point, Chris. I guess it depends. I mean, Wolverine is great.
Maybe this is like a Socrates kind of like philosophical, like, you know.
Wow.
Maybe Plato should be writing this.
That is deep. Maybe what's those guys? Who are those guys that did Action Philosophers? I forget. Van Lent or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't remember.
Maybe they should write this book.
Maybe they should. You know,
lots of Wolverine fans out there, though, Chris. Lots of Wolverine fans, absolutely. And like, as you say, the premise is interesting. It's something to go out and check out this week. Also this week, Sweet Tooth number 13 by Jeff Lemire.
Jeff, a good Canadian boy there.
Good Canadian boy, local Southern Ontario boy.
Yep.
And I'm going to give a quick plug that he is coming to my shop, Big B Comics, Saturday, September the 18th. This is such a shameful plug.
It really is. You know what?
Embarrassed,
I can't
almost.
Believe you would stoop so low as to use our wonderful, wonderful radio broadcast as to plug something like that. But
I
you know what?
I can believe it.
Actually, I'm not really all that surprised. But you know what? Jeff Lemire is a fantastic guy and a great artist and creator. If you do get a chance to meet him ever, I highly recommend that you go ahead and check out Sweet Tooth.
I met him at the Fan Expo this weekend, said hi, and he's a very nice man. And, of course, he won the Eisners – sorry, not the Eisners, the Schusters
yes.
in 08 for his Essex County trilogy.
Yes, yes.
And now he's signed on exclusive to DC. I think he's doing Superboy and
you know what?
The Atom.
And this is how a lot of these independent guys go. You know, the big corporations like Marvel and DC – realize that these guys actually have cut their teeth in the independent era, and they actually know what they're doing. They're good storytellers, they're good writers, they're good artists, and that's basically how DC and Marvel, you know, hire new talent these days. They want to see if they can make it on their own before.
So that's like the farm, right?
It really is.
Like
these days, the indie
Oni Press and Image and all these places, they're like the farm system for the big boys.
The days of just all of a sudden making it big by, you know, taking your portfolio to Marvel or DC at a convention and being hired on right away, those days are gone.
Making it big.
Yeah, making it big. You know, now they want to see that you can actually know what you're doing. I mean, really, even guys like escapes
Frank Frazetta.
No, no. Who's the guy that did Torso and?
Bendis.
Brian Michael Bendis started out as an indie guy, kind of. You know, he did some work for Image, and now of course he's the main guy at Marvel right now. And that seems to be the way that people go ahead and get interested in the mainstream characters.
Yeah, you're right, Chris. Chris, we're going to – because we have such a busy show.
Yes.
We have so much to talk about.
Yes, I know we do.
So little time.
I know.
And I really shouldn't go on.
You could, but we'd be wasting time.
Right. So I'm going to end new this week and just mention that WWE Heroes number 6 comes up.
Way-o. Hold on a second.
Hey-o.
Once again, you know what? I know this is number 6, and I'm surprised we haven't even talked about this yet.
I didn't even notice 1 to 5 to tell you.
Yeah, well, which is really not very good for you, seeing as you own the store. But anyways, no. I digress. WWE, the wrestling franchise industry, has a bunch of comics out, and now number 6 is coming out, and really, I'm amazed that this is sort of a long line of attempts at comic books, but I'm surprised that it's made it this far. I don't know if you're – do you remember years ago they had the Ultimate Warrior had his own comic, and
– I don't remember that. I remember the Undertaker had
the Undertaker for Chaos Comics had his own comic.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Warrior had one, and you know what? This is just another attempt at wrestling and comic books trying to meld into the same thing.
Now –
I don't know.
Now wrestling. I wouldn't think wrestling translates well into comics, and here's why. Wrestling is like sensory overload.
Well, yeah, but the thing is about wrestling, though.
Sound,
absolutely.
Video, audio, that whole thing is just everything's exaggerated and over. And comics is just kind of, I don't know, you can kind of set your own pace.
Yeah,
in the
because
comic
comics aren't exaggerated at all. There's no.
I didn't mean that. I meant you're choosing the pace to read a comic.
True enough.
And whereas these things are, you know, it's an onslaught on your senses, the way the sound is coming out, and the way they're acting, and the way they're all.
Well, but the only thing that I'll add to that is that, you know, really, wrestling is a major soap opera. And really, that's all the comic books are too, right? I mean, people tune in every month to see what's going on with their favorite stories. How is any different from Days of Our Lives or General Hospital or whatever, right? Like it's all still a soap opera. You're still tuning in all the time, and that's what wrestling is too. You want to find out, well, who turned to the bad side, and you know who's good now, and what's happening between these two guys, and blah blah
what's
blah.
How many years do they have to change the letters to make wrestling fresh? Because it was WWF, and then it's WWE.
You know why it was changed to WWE?
No, I don't.
That's because the World Wildlife Foundation, it has that panda logo.
Oh.
They laid claim saying, hey, you know what? We actually own the whole WWF logo and the WWF acronym. So you know what? You can't use that anymore. And there was a big court battle about that a long time ago, and WWE now lost.
Wow.
So the World Wrestling Federation lost.
I didn't know that, but the sad part is, and it's sad on my note, is that I still think of the WWF as what the wrestling is called.
Well,
right?
that's pretty much what it is.
So in that way, the Wildlife Foundation lost because these guys have ingrained in my head
right.
The WWF is wrestling.
Right, and it's true, and you know what? It's basically the same thing, but you know they just don't have that logo anymore for WWF. It's now WWE.
It's the same, but it's different.
It's the same. I say. For those of you listening in England, I say, old chum,
old chap.
All right. Well, let's continue on.
Let's not dilly dally and move along. Chris,
dilly dally.
Chris, you know, now that we're done with new this week.
Yes.
Usually I'm expecting DJ Chris to have some sort of musical interlude.
Oh, yes. So allow me. Hold on a second.
And now Chris is acting all surprised. scrambling to his keyboard.
Hold on. I will absolutely get some music going here. And of course, you know, this is, you know, we do have actually a request for this to have be played all every week, but we can't play it every week because we don't want to inundate you with what has become our favorite song. And that is, of course, the Aquaman song.
Aquaman. No one greater than Aquaman, king of Atlantis, king of the sea. Where the danger is, that's where he'll be. Always defending you, yeah, you and me. Aquaman, he can swim faster than the fastest thing in the sea or on the Mira, his beautiful queen beside him. He'll fight with all his might till the end. Oh, you can always depend on mankind's truest friend, Aquaman.
Such a great song, such a great song, and a great segue into industry news, by the way. And you know what? The great part of industry news this week, as in last week, is producer of the show, Anthony Falcone, has got sponsors for our show, the industry news.
Well, that's right. And you know what? This week, industry news has been brought to you by Ferris Aircraft. Whether it's military power or commercial flights, we love to fly at Ferris Aircraft. Wow. So it's great that we actually have some sponsorship these days.
You know what? He didn't tell me whether these guys are paying or not.
I don't think they are for some reason.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have to discuss that with Anthony next time we see him.
Well, you know, of course, Ferris Aircraft is, Green Lantern.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was a real aircraft company.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, anyways.
Okay. Chris, the first story I have at Interesting News is a great story, is Comic Book Daily.
Yes. We're podcast every week.
We're podcast every week. Yeah. Turns one. Turned one yesterday.
You're kidding. We've been podcasting them for a year now.
Well, I think we've been podcasting on them for about 6 months or 8 months.
Oh,
is it?
Okay. Yeah.
But they, as an actual website, turned one.
You know, and people that do tune into the show via the Comic Book Daily, they love the show and they listen to it. And so that's great for comicbookdaily.com.
Yeah, and the editor-in-chief, or as everybody that writes for him calls him, JJJ, Pete Corsi, he wrote a nice little article on the first anniversary.
Oh, very good.
And They had great coverage. Our topic later on in the show, it will be the Fan Expo.
Of course, and, we got to get to that. We will.
And
we
Comic
will.
Book Daily had some amazing coverage on that. But congratulations to Comic Book Daily
on
turning a year old.
And you know, and from what I'm hearing, it's one of the better comic book websites out there.
So one of the better ones.
So we really got to make sure we give our hats off to them.
Okay. Also turning one, Chris, also turning one is the Marvel-Disney merger.
Oh, has that been a year already?
Yes,
oh,
1 year old. Yes.
Wow, okay.
The intent and the whole deal was kind of done last August, August.
And I guess we really haven't seen a whole lot in that regard yet, other than a lot of news about projects that are coming up. Like, remember you're telling me before about how they're putting little bits of money towards movies. Like, say, for example, there might be like a Dazzler movie or something
right,
like that.
Right.
So I think that probably wouldn't have happened without the Disney's backing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I wanted to discuss. Now, what's happened in a year? Nothing.
In a year, nothing. But you know what? I think that the Hollywood machine moves pretty slowly.
Right.
I think these things take a long time for things to get going. Certainly, we're seeing a long but gigantic leap in the number of Marvel movies coming out. Of course, we have the Thor movie coming out soon. We've already started seeing trailers for that, and then we've got Captain America, then the Avengers movie. And I think based on the success of those movies, we're going to see a whole lot more coming out. And, of course, Disney will ride the coattails of all that, really.
Right. Now, I don't know how – I'm not very well-versed in TV, but I don't know how many channels Disney controls. I know Disney controls – like my kids are 11 and 9, and they watch a lot of that, Zack and Cody.
Right.
What's the girl's name with Achy Breaky Heart Dad?
Hannah Montana.
Hannah Montana.
Wait, really? Your kids watch that?
No, I mean like all those types. The witches? Okay. They watched the one with Selma Gomez or something or whatever.
Who?
I got the name totally wrong there.
Selma Gomez?
No, it's the one where...
Escaped Witch Mountain?
No, listen. It's a comedy about wizards anyway.
I have no clue.
Yeah, okay. But point is, these are all very, very big hits on Disney Channel things. And I haven't seen any kind of Marvel programming.
Well,
and I'm wondering if they got other TV venues.
Well,
there is
an Avengers cartoon coming out soon. And, who knows how long it'll be until we start seeing more Marvel cartoons coming out on the Disney Channel. And you never know. Maybe one day there'll be a Marvel channel. Well, there'll be nothing but Marvel-type products on, right? And it's all Marvel-related.
Good point.
You know, and I think that'd be really cool to see. I mean, who wouldn't want to see, like, live-action Black Widow or, a Doctor Strange cartoon or something like that, right? I think it'd be fantastic.
Right. Well, it's just – it's been a year, though, and the idea and the premise behind Disney taking over Marvel, it excited me. I'll tell you why it excited me is I never trusted Marvel. Marvel, like, pardon my French, but it's almost like, these bunch of shysters running the thing, and they're always looking for that quick buck, and they're always looking for a gimmick, and they're always looking for an easy way out. That's always my thought with Marvel, and I thought that Disney having that big, huge dad, that kind of a firm dad. Listen, son, just be patient. It's a long-term thing. I always thought that would kind of help.
And I think it probably will, because I completely agree with you. Let's not forget that Marvel, in its heyday, in the 90s, they were all about the variant covers and the different die-cut covers and trying to sell as many different type of things that they could just to get that quick buck. Whereas DC really had better foresight,
right?
And they were looking down the trade paperback aisle. They knew that what they had to be quality that would stick around for a while and not just end it for the quick buck. However, having said that, maybe Disney is realizing this and with Marvel, and they're not trying to put out that quick buck thing right now. They're really concentrating on what they can do to have a sustainable franchise with the Marvel characters over the number of years. And maybe that's why we haven't seen anything yet.
I hope so. Marvel and Disney, the marriage, 1 year old. We're still waiting for babies.
Little spider baby.
Yes.
Aww,
basically, the marriage hasn't produced anything yet, is my point.
Not yet.
All right. Let's move on, Chris. The Harvey Awards were introduced, or sorry, were awarded in Baltimore. And the Harvey Awards are the umpteenth kind of comic book awards out there. And
Well, hold on. I mean, there's not that many comic book
you're
awards
right.
out there.
You're right.
There's a few. There's the Eisners. There's the Schusters. There's the Harveys. And
what's that one in England called? The Eagle.
The Eagle Award.
Eagle
that's
Awards
right.
in
yeah,
England?
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah. And really, that's kind of about it. So there's not like a whole lot out there.
Well, there was a Comic-Con other than Fan Expo this weekend, and it was held in Baltimore, and the Harvey Awards were presented there. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but the best writer went to Robert Kirkman for Walking Dead.
Right.
No surprise.
Yes. Well, and you know, I think our listeners might be interested to know that the Harvey Award is actually awarded after the Harvey comics, of course, and not necessarily about the giant rabbit, invisible rabbit that was a star of the James. What's his name?
James Bond?
No, James. Oh,
James
no.
Earl Jones.
Oh boy, you know the guy that was in It's a Wonderful
James
Life.
Dean.
No, It's a Wonderful Life.
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart. That's right. It. Jimmy Stewart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not about that movie. But anyways, yes, the Harvey Awards, a great another set of awards for mainly for independent kind of people. But you know, it's
Best Artist went to Robert Crumb for his Book of Genesis work.
Very cool.
R. Crumb, of course, basically the god of independent underground XXX late 60s comics.
As I said, you know, these awards are mainly about more about independent kind of guys.
Right. And I wanted to mention one more thing we're going to talk about today. The Harvey Awards award for the best syndicated strip, and I have issues with this, went to Mutz.
Oh, you know what?
I hate Mutz.
You know what? Mutz is one of those artsy kind of comics that, yeah.
It is?
It really is. Yeah, people love Mutz, and I don't really understand why, but it's like, oh, it's so cute and artsy.
Yeah, one of the dogs always says something with a sh, right?
Yeah.
And nothing really happens in it.
Yeah.
And
You know what? I saw a Mutz comic the other day, and it had two crabs talking to each other, and one crab swore to the other crab, and the other crab swore back, and then they realized they were like-minded crabs. And that was the joke.
Nice.
And you're like, how is that even funny?
Yeah.
No, I think if I was to give an award to any of the syndicated strips, it would definitely have to go to Sherman's Lagoon.
Yeah, I know you like Lagoon.
Yeah.
And there's so many good things. You know what? Mutz is my second non-favorite one next to For Better and For Worse.
You know what? That's actually, it is pretty, it's not terrible, but it is.
To me, I never got into it.
You know what used to be worse than that was Adam at Home, but with the new writer and new artist, it's actually pretty funny these days.
You know what? I don't like the other one. I don't like my kids. Something like Family Circus, Gag Me with a Spoon.
Not me. Really? Is Family Circus even still going anymore?
Yeah, it's still going. Anyway, best syndicated strip went to Mutz. I have a dispute with that. I would have gave it to Pickles or Sherman's Lagoon Dilbert or you know, umpteen more deserving strips than
fair
that
enough,
one.
Fair enough. Okay. All right.
Chris, moving on, because we have to rush because we have so much to talk about. I want to talk about Diamond announcing that they are going to early delivery.
Oh.
They are going to deliver comics to the comic stores on Tuesday. But the stores have to cease and desist, kind of, and not put them out till Wednesday.
Okay, but you know what? This has happened before where, in the past, they were told that, you know, comics would be shipped on Thursday. Or sorry, shipped on Wednesday.
I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger bot today.
Thanks, Wimpy. So, you know, they were told that they're going to ship them on Wednesday, but they can't go out until Thursday. Now, you know, but of course, comic book stores never abided by that decision, and they put them out on Wednesday. And now, same thing's happening. So how is this going to change anything?
Well, I think they're going to send out a bunch of Secret Santas out there and having a look.
Secret Santas.
I mean, what do you call those things?
I like Secret Santas going out there.
What do you call those things?
Secret Shoppers?
Secret Shoppers,
yes.
Yeah. They're gonna send a bunch of secret shoppers.
If Diamond's listening, and if they want to send me as a secret shopper to say like the Bermuda or Bahamas or something like that, I'd be more than happy to see how that comic book store is doing.
Well, you know what? Where it's gonna help? I'm telling you where it's gonna help. I mean, I participate in the pull, as they call it, every Wednesday morning.
Right.
I run down to the, in Canada, it's the Canpar, in the Canpar booth.
Okay, so hold on. We got to beep. Let's just back up for a second here. I got to mention that the pull means that, you know, every week the comic book store gets their comics, and the pull means that what they're doing is they're pulling out all the comics that belong to the subscribers every week. So if I'm a subscriber to, say, Big B Comics or whoever, and I collect, say, Captain America and Power Girl and Fearless Dawn, so that way every week when those issues come out, they're going to pull those comics and set them aside for me. So that's when Walt talks about doing the pull every week. That's what he's talking about.
Thank God you cleared that up, Chris. Yes, the pull. So what this means, and of course, I don't get back to the shop until about 9:45, and then we feverishly open up all the boxes, open up the computer files, open up everything, and start the process. And on big weeks, it is really, really tough to get the books ready before, say, 1 o'clock.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Now, you have your diehards that maybe are taking their lunch break, and they're in at 11:45.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that moving to Tuesday night, Tuesday delivery, will help, but satisfy that early crowd.
Okay, but hold on. Now, hold on a second here. Does this now mean that stores will now start putting out comics on Tuesday night?
I hope not. We're not going to, and I don't think most – I think, you know – I won't say 99, but I guarantee you 90% of the comics won't.
But why wouldn't
the shops won't?
Okay, but hold on. If I'm a store owner, and I'm getting my books now on Tuesday at, let's say, 2 o'clock, right? So why not start putting them out right away so that if some guy is, like, you know, just itching to get that comic and he's not a subscriber, why wouldn't I go to that store now on Tuesday night rather than on Wednesday afternoon?
You raise an excellent point, and I hope, and it's my hope that the law, the rules are enforced, are backed by penalties that are severe enough to.
I don't know if they're going to be. I mean, let's say like I'm a regular at your store. Let's say I'm a regular at Big B Comics, you know, but I'm not a subscriber. So, and let's say I'm a subscriber at Jim Bob Joe's comics shop.
He is just down the street.
And he's just down the street. Mm-hmm. And he decides to put his comics out on Tuesday night. So now all of a sudden, Big B is going to lose out on those sales.
Well, then Diamond, for some strange reason, gets that anonymous call. Oh, excuse me. There's a Jim Bob Billy Bob selling comics on Tuesday.
And they get Jim Bob, Jilly Bob.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Stan.
I'd like to report an illegal comic book sale of Jim Bob, Billy Bob to schmo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just hoping somehow we police each other and they police us to a satisfactory level where it's not abused.
Comic book police.
Comic book police.
Open up your doors. I think you're selling Captain America too early. What's that? Is that a Thor in your hand? I'm Thor.
What issue number is that, pal? It better not be 612. No, it's 6'11".
I swear to God, it's 6'11". Yeah. Please don't frisk me.
Oh, man. You know what, Chris? You are right. It opens up that can of worms, and I'm sure it will be abused, especially in competitive markets, right?
Absolutely.
Where there's a couple of comic shops close to each other, and they're all looking for an edge. I don't know how they're going to stop that. I don't know.
Put down that Batman.
Yes, now
you can't buy it until tomorrow.
Right. There should be some sort of, I don't know what there should be. I have no idea what there should be, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
I hope it goes well.
All right, let's keep going here.
Okay, let's keep going here. Chris, I think I'm going to end industry news right now.
Okay.
Because we have so much to talk about.
All right,
about
Fan Expo. You know, I do actually have another song all queued up, ready to go here. And this is from our favorite cartoon, the old 60s Spider-Man cartoon by Kranz. This one's called The Scarf.
Hey,
Oh, yeah, Chris, that song swings.
Well, you know, so does Spider-Man.
Yeah, he does swing.
He really does. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Hey, Chris, you know, and that song, again, like, I don't know how you pick them, but that song is just the segue of segues into our feature of tonight.
I'm really not too sure, but you know what? As far as segues goes, our feature is actually brought to you by S-Mart. For all your back-to-school and zombie-killing needs, shop smart. Shop S-Mart.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing that we're getting these sponsors. We've come a long way. We've come a long way, Chris.
Really have, haven't we? Yeah.
Chris, you know what? We've been moving the show along at a blistering pace, which is great.
Blistering.
Because we do have to talk about the Fan Expo that you and I both attended
this past weekend. Yes.
And the Fan Expo, of course, being the Canada's largest comic book and pop culture event.
Right. And not only is it Canada's largest, it's probably the third largest in North America. And of course, it's a comic book, it's an anime, it's a horror, and a science fiction convention all rolled into one. And really, when you call it like this, it's really become a pop culture event.
Yes.
Right?
Remember when Robin Williams did that imitation of Elmer Fudd doing Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now?
I don't, but I'm
and
sure you'll remind
me. It was
me.
Going, oh, the Hoa.
The Hoa.
The Hoa.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, Chris, lots to talk about.
Yes.
I don't know where to start. You know where I'm going to start? I'm going to start about at our booth.
Yes,
you and
okay.
I both worked the Big B / Blue Beetle booth.
We did. Okay, so for those of you who aren't aware of what we're doing, I did actually help out Walt at the Big B booth. This Big B booth. That's a lot of B's there. But Big B booth this past weekend, and sales were great. But, you know, all in all, what did you think of the show?
I thought the attendance was amazing. The attendance was stunning.
And you know what? This becomes part of the problem, right? The attendance was almost too good. You know, they had the guest lineup for this show was too good. They had not only did they have Stan Lee, who is the creator of the co-creator of the Marvel Universe, they also had William Shatner, Captain Kirk himself was there, as well as
T.J. Hooker himself.
You know, T.J. Hooker and all that kind of stuff. But they also had James Marsden, I think, who was Spike from Buffy.
Yep.
They had Adam West, and they had Julie Newmar. They had
Burt Ward.
They had all these actors and creators, and oh my god, the list just went on and on and on. And because of this, it seemed like they actually sold too many tickets, and there was a lot of hubbub about what was happening with people not being able to get into the show.
We are going to get to that later, Chris. That is a hot topic. We are going to get to that later. But what I want to report initially is the comic from the comic book scene. Basically our booth brought is old comic books and bargain comic books,
right,
and some excess toys,
right,
we had basically from the store. And you know what? Collectors came out and they were active. They were actively buying, not just at our booth. I talked to a whole bunch of back issue comic dealers at the con, and everybody said they were busy. Everybody said they were happy with the convention. From our end, you know what? There was some dealer activity at the beginning of the convention, and what happens is usually there's some commerce that happens even before the doors open.
Yeah,
where
between dealer to dealer.
Between dealer to dealer. So let's say an American dealer comes in, and he may not have seen me in 8 months, and he's a very, very active American dealer, and he may say, "Hey, Walt, what do you have new, you know, to have a look at?" And even before the door is open, he'll put a stack aside and some money will exchange hands.
Well, and you know what? You're actually bringing up kind of a good point here. For our listeners who, you know, don't get a chance to get into the show before it opens like the dealers would, they're all of a sudden missing out on opportunities to buy that the dealers have, right? Because really the dealers seem to have first crack at other dealers' books.
Right. And it's an odd phenomenon, because what happens is, I think it's like, you know, everybody has a personal perception of what is good and what isn't.
Right.
So, for example, I'm just going to say I may have a book priced at $100.
Right.
And I may be prepared to sell that at 90 or 80 or whatever, right? And then there's some dealer that comes in and goes, oh, you have that? You know, I'll pay you $80 for that.
Sure.
And he'll take it back to his table and put $150 on it.
Right. Right.
Because, you know, he has this perception that that's what that book is worth.
Right.
Now, I may be the exact same guy to him.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going, what do you have that at $20 for? I'll give you $20.
Sure.
I'll take it back to my table and put $30 on something like that, because that's the value I think it is. Values sometimes are how can I say it? Values are based sometimes on knowledge, right? So if he has some knowledge that I don't have, or if I have some knowledge that he doesn't have, and there may be some discrepancy in pricing. So for example, if I know that, I don't know, Walking Dead number one is such a great book, and in my store everybody asks me for it.
Yeah.
And for example, he may not think that, and I buy it off him for $20 and I take it to my booth and I sell it for $30.
And
vice versa. So there's a lot of that jockeying going on before the show. And active dealers also are very good at having want lists, having people that they know.
And I was going to say that as well. I mean, you know, particularly with some high-end dealers, they may come to you and buy books not to sell at that particular show, but they may have a want list from a buyer who
in
may
Toledo.
Be in Toledo or Connecticut or Hawaii or Germany or something like that, who's looking for a particular book, and they're not buying it to resell at that show. They're buying it to resell, you know, directly to another dealer, like, you know, or to another customer, like, you know, months from now.
Chris, you know, I got to say this. You know, I'm going to mention one of the dealers because I think he's one of the best dealers in comics, Harley Yee of Livonia.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all the comic fans listening will know who Harley is. Harley always delivers great books.
Absolutely.
And I kind of feel like that the girls on the, you know, the old Spice guy when he comes into town?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's always that girl waiting for him?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that girl when Harley comes into town, because it's basically like the man does so many shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm the guy in Toronto. I'm not the guy. I'm sorry. I'm one of the guys in Toronto that he may kind of come over and say, hey, what have you accumulated that I can look at? But then when he goes to, let's say, the Philadelphia show, there may be some local guys that are half decent.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, you know, he'll pick something off of them. Or when he goes to Wichita, there may be a local guy that's pretty good at...
Harley Yee is the James Brown of comics.
He's
the hardest working man in comics.
He is.
I mean, here's a guy, I think he does... Now, correct me if I'm wrong, he does something like 48 comic conventions a year.
I think he does 97, and there's only 52 weeks.
Yeah,
you know,
he does something, it's
insane.
It's ridiculous. Like, he is just constantly on the road. That is his entire life. And, man, I couldn't do it.
Right.
He is the hardest working man in comics as far as the dealers go. And I give my hats off to him.
Right. So anyway, that's basically what happens at the booth. The Big B booth was very active. Customers came and they bought. And so from that perspective, from an old comic dealer's perspective, the show was very successful.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, as far as people wanting to get in, and I don't want to get to the getting in part, but I mean, as far as people attending the show, everybody that was in the show seemed to be having a great time. You know, one of the things I really love about this particular show, and I was talking to our producer, Anthony Falcone, about this earlier today, is you know, one of the great things about the show is that because it's not just a comic book convention, we have the horror, we have the anime, we have the science fiction, we
the
have
horror.
The comics all combined into one. As somebody who's just walking around and enjoying the convention, it is fantastic to see the number of fans that come out dressed up, not just in comic book characters, but so, you know, you'll walk down the aisle and you'll see Wolverine and Spider-Man and White Queen and Rogue, but you'll also see zombies and then Jason and Freddy from the horror convention.
Star Wars guys,
Pokemon and anime people, and you'll see Star Wars people from the science fiction crowd. So it's like it's this amalgamation of all these amazing characters all dressed up, and it's so much fun just to see people dressed up. I myself have never dressed up at these conventions. I just don't have the guts for it. You know, maybe one of these days I'll actually grow the cojones and try to do that, but I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Nah, Chris, I think you'd look great in a Pikachu costume. Hey, Chris, let me ask your opinion. Who won the booth battle, Marvel or DC?
Oh, you know what? That's an excellent question. DC gave away way more better. That's great.
I mean, way more better.
You never know. I was a university or a college professor. The DC gave out a much better product. However, Marvel was
had the excitement. Whenever I walked by the DC booth, it seemed like there was like a huge line of people, just like robots, walking by and picking up the free samples.
Absolutely.
But everything was quiet.
Yeah.
Here you go, guys. Here's your samples. Stuff. Yeah, Take it and go.
Yeah, whereas
Marvel had all kinds of cool things happening at their booth. It's loud activity.
Yeah, you know, Marvel had they had like a game show going on.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the $100,000 pyramid where they had, you know, a contestant would sit and they'd like try to egg them on as to guess what the answer was.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all kinds of giveaways and they had all kinds of a great big booth going on. The people cheering and chanting, and they had like, you know, one of the chants that they were saying was no more rings. And of course that's a direct blow to DC with the whole Green Lantern and rings and all that kind of stuff.
So just so Marvel knows, we sold a crap load of rings at our booth. So rings work, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it really did.
But you know what Marvel also had? Marvel had the coup de grace, as they say, the piece de resistance.
Piece de resistance.
They had Stan the Man at their booth.
They really did, you know, and sadly, there's nobody really in the DC universe that could have that appeal like Stan has right alive anymore. But they did have Stan at the booth for Marvel.
Yeah, and when he was there, I kind of, believe it or not, the Bigby booth was right beside the Marvel booth.
Yes.
And the worst possible thing to happen to the Bigby business was when Stan came.
Well, yeah,
because there's nobody at our booth.
Nobody paid any attention. It was all about Stan.
Yeah, and and rightfully so.
For sure.
I went over.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, there's nobody at our booth. I didn't have to man it.
But
what was great about it is, as each person walked up to see Stan and to shake his hand and to get an autograph and stuff, Stan was actually engaging everybody. Like, he wasn't just, "Hey, go, here's my autograph. This is Stan Lee. Excelsior," whatever.
This is Stan Lee.
He was like, "Hey, how you doing, schmuck?" You know, and that kind of stuff.
No,
and photo ops and all that kind of stuff.
He was really great. He was obviously very excited about, you know, here's a guy that you know, it really could be very smarmy and could very well just ride on the coattails and know what he's got. But he was actually very engaging with the fans, and he knew that the fans are what made him. And I was actually very impressed with the way that he held himself, and he was very friendly to everybody, and he had a great time.
Yeah, and to me, I was so happy to see this is a, you know, a gentleman in his older years. He was spry, he was fit, he was healthy, he looked great, and he was energetic.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I hope Stan stays around for 50 more years, but he was just, it was great to see Stan Lee in such vibrant health.
Yeah, no, he was really great, and, but the rest of the show was great, too. You know, there was, we had William Shatner was there for a day.
Now, I tried to go out, first of all, I'm going to go on a tangent here. My wife and kids came late Sunday. Around 3:30.
Right. Yeah, yeah, okay.
And it's like, okay, I'm going to steal away from the booth, take my wife and kids around. And so, you know, the mistake I guess I made is, you know, my kids, right? They're going around and they're seeing all this stuff. And like literally 10 minutes in, I was $190 out of pocket. Chris.
Well, you know, what these shows, you can't go to a show like this without any money. You have to be prepared to spend a lot of money. And if you have kids, be prepared to spend even more money.
Oh, it was incredible. It was, I don't know, they had these little parrot things that stay on your shoulder, these demon things.
Those things were selling like hotcakes. Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah. They were like, go ahead. I mean,
I just want to explain to our listening audience what they were. So there were like, okay, so if you can picture like a parrot sitting on a pirate, who like sitting on the shoulder kind of thing.
Or a demon or anything.
Or whatever. Yeah. And these people were selling these little animals that would sit on your shoulder, and you'd have like a little wire
thing you'd run it down your back so you couldn't see it and hold it in your hand,
and you could move their heads and you could move their body kind of thing.
Yeah,
and they would magnetically attach to underneath your shirt.
Yeah, so it
sits on your shoulder, and they were selling anywhere from like $50 to like $150.
Yeah, $200.
$200.
So here I go, like a schmuck, because my one kid loves stuffed animals. Oh, look at this. This is cool, Dad. I'm thinking, yeah, I'll get a couple of these for 15 bucks each.
Sure,
you know what I mean? Why not? And it's like, you know, you're acting like a tough guy in front of the lady and you go, yeah, how much are these two? Oh, they're $112 each. Okay, you're not getting any of these. Well, come on. And so we got the smaller ones for 70 each.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
But you know what? Those things were selling, like, I saw everybody had those.
Yeah.
Like, tons of people had them. So, whoever's the inventor of that, wow, congratulations.
Kudos to them. Yeah. But you know what? It's part of the show. You bring what people want, and you will be successful.
For sure, that's right.
Now, I went down, I took the kids and the wife down to that area where Shatner was. I wanted them to see kind of all the celebrities and stuff. But it was, Chris, it was just so many people. Oh. We could not get near.
Well, you know,
because
and,
the lineup.
And I think that part of the problem of that particular show was the lineups and just the overall attendance of that show. Now, having read a little bit about this on the internet and different shows and things like that, they were talking a little bit about how the attendance was. I mean, people were lined up around the block a number of times. People were waiting for hours to get into this show. People that already had tickets, they bought them online ahead of time. They were still waiting for 2 hours to get in because the way you had to get in, it was constricted by the number of entrances to the hall.
Right.
And, you know, the problem then became that they had so many people inside the show that it was packed to capacity. So even people that had already bought tickets weren't allowed in. I myself, I tried to leave at one point at 1 o'clock, and I was told that if you leave, you can't get back in. And I was working the show.
Right. Now, from what I understand, I have a bit of backstory to this. One is that the Fan Expo in Toronto every year is held at the Metro Toronto Convention Center in Toronto in the South Building.
Yes.
This year, apparently, there was some sort of, honestly, a gynecologist convention
down in the South Building.
And for some scheduling reasons, Fan Expo had to go to the North Building. Now, the North Building is much more panoramic, much more majestic, much more. They have that atrium kind of thing. It's right in the downtown hub. You look through the glass up, and you can see the big buildings.
The North Building, it has glass windows,
but it has less capacity than the South Building.
And I didn't know that until recently. Yes.
Right. So what happened was is that Fan Expo people, I guess, knew there were crowd issues last year, so they made adjustments in terms of how to get people through quicker and how to have more entry points and more sales points.
Yes.
So they did that well enough, but they almost fixed that problem too well
because
too many people were flooding into this thing. And at some point on Saturday, the fire marshal came and he basically shut the place down in terms of no more entry. It's almost like, remember those popular bars we used to go to and they're, you know, where you'd be a lineup and
You
know, if five people left, he'd let five people in.
That's right.
And that's
that's what happened basically on the weekend.
That's what it got to on the weekend. They basically had crowd issues, and on Saturday they wouldn't let anybody in until enough people came out. Now, of course, it's not one for one, right? So you'd have to wait 20 minutes and they'd kind of have, we'll let 100 people in.
But there were
1,000 people in line.
You know what? And apparently there was an attendance of about 60,000 people here at that show on the weekend. And, you know, although that sounds like a lot, you have to remember that the show in San Diego holds about 120,000 people. So this is why when we say that this is actually the third largest show, this is why. I mean, I don't know if Toronto has the capacity to have a show that has anything more than 60,000 people.
Right, and you're absolutely right. Not at the Metro Toronto Convention Center.
No.
And then here's the problem with the Toronto show. Toronto is one of those cities where the downtown is the hub.
Yes, absolutely.
Downtown is such a lively tourist place. It's like Manhattan in a way,
right?
Whereas places like, say, Chicago or San Diego, you kind of have to go out of downtown into like this Donald Stevenson Center or whatever the center is in San Diego. The point is, I don't know, there's some sort of – the only place a huge show in Toronto can happen where you can get 100,000 people is at the C&E Grounds.
Right.
But the organizers, the Hobby Star Company, the organizers are resistant to go to C&E Grounds because of subway issues and all that kind of stuff.
And not only that. So They want to go to the CNE grounds, which is the for those of you who don't know what the CNE is, it's the Canadian National Exhibition. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Canadian National Exhibition is on at the same time.
At the same time.
As
so
the Hobby Star show.
Right.
So they can't have that show at the CNE grounds because the CNE is going on at that time.
Right.
So they either have to limit the number of people who are attending the show or change the dates of the show to make it earlier so that they can make a bigger crowd and have it at the CNE at an earlier date or a later date, which I don't know. I don't think they want to do that because they've really established themselves.
Well, yeah, it's that last weekend in August in Toronto. That's the place to be, right?
Yeah.
There are people coming to our booth, Chris. We had a buyer that loaded up on a whole bunch of stuff from Australia.
Right.
We had many American, you know, a gentleman from Orlando came up, and a gentleman from South Dakota. These are our buyers that come up, and it's like that's the schedule of the year to hit Toronto.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And, it's a tough problem for Hobby Star because they have this great, great thing, and they've done such a great job on getting it to this point. But now it's like, cripe, we're huge, but we can't get any huger.
No. Unless they change venues, unless they change the hall, they cannot physically get any bigger than what they are right now.
But once you change the hall, you risk damaging logistics terms of ingrained places to go and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, it is hard. It is hard. I don't know the solution. I don't know the answer. But I honestly think that Fan Expo in Toronto is – you know, one of the premier shows, obviously.
Oh, sure.
I don't think it's broken.
No.
And I don't know if it needs fixing. And the problem with society in general is they want to see growth. You know, 8% increase over last year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what's wrong with limiting
maintaining a sustainable
60,000?
For sure. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
Well, economically speaking, there's everything wrong with it because you're not growing.
Well, okay, but at the same time, economically speaking, as long as you keep the fans happy, they're going to keep coming back. Whereas if you keep on pissing them off, pardon my language, they're not going to want to come back, like many have said over the past weekend. Because they waited for 3 hours to get in.
You know what, though? That is fanboys just venting. You know that they're going to be the first guys buying those advanced tickets next year.
Fair enough. Okay, let's just get off this topic for a second here.
All right.
You know what? I want to know from you, what was, in fact, the best thing you saw all weekend at that show? Was there a favorite costume, or was there anything like that?
Well, the Tron girls look good in their costumes.
Oh, you know what? They did look really good. You know what? I'm part of the show. They had the Tron Legacy movie set up at the show, and they had all these girls who are in skin tight outfits dressed as Tron girls. I don't really know exactly what that's all about.
Neither did I, but it looked good.
But it still looked very good. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? I was just impressed. I was impressed with the Marvel booth. I was impressed with the activity that Marvel generated with their stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that it was great PR. How about you?
Well, you know what? I don't really have – I wasn't – you know, there are a number of different things that I enjoyed about the show. As always, I loved going up and talking to the creators when I had time. You know, I have to point out that somebody was trying to sell me something, and I can't remember who it was, but they got to really fix some of the PR people out there who are trying to sell products, because somebody handed me a flyer for something, and I think it was a game or something, like maybe a video game, and I asked them, I said, well, what is this? And she said, well, it's like Harry Potter, but way more awesome. So
nice.
what is that? What does that mean? Way more awesome, yeah.
Nice.
So, you know, I think there is some room for improvement on the PR scale out there.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. Well, Chris, you know what? We're gonna slowly wrap up this week's show. And it flew by, as always.
Yeah, as always,
But, you know, in closing, my thoughts on the con were you know, it's great, and I encourage everybody, it doesn't have to be the Fan Expo, wherever you're listening, if there's a comic book show or a convention in your area, go.
Well, and you know, it's a good point. You know what? I brought my girlfriend for the first time to one of these shows, and she had a great time. She knows absolutely nothing about comic books, and she really had a great time just wandering around and seeing all the people dressed up and all that kind of stuff, and she had a great time. So you know what? Why not go out and check out one of these shows just to see what it's all about?
Yeah, and from our perspective, it's always nice to go and see those old friends. There's a community of people that actually go. It's almost like circus clowns, right? You know, like we're hey, how you doing,
clowns
George?
Is right, yeah.
How you doing, George? Yeah, hey, that's bad. Right, yeah. So
well, it really becomes old home week for us because you know you're walking down the aisles and all of a sudden somebody's calling out your name and you're like, oh, hey, Bill, how you doing? You know.
They still let you into these things?
Yeah, exactly. But,
all right, Chris. Anyway.
But listen, that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed our show. Please give us a shout-out if you do enjoy it. You can also please email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or walt at bigbcomics.com or mailbox@bigbcomics.com. This show has been produced by Walter Duralia, Chris Owen, and Anthony Falcone. Go out and support your local comic book retailers. Try something different, you know, and have a great day.
See everyone next week.